The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, December 4, 2020. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and boy, oh boy, do we have a treat scheduled for Saturday on CBS, America's most watched network. It's a network of stars. And on Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern, CBS is going to be the place to watch number one Gonzaga versus number two Baylor inside Bankers Life Fieldhouse, downtown Indianapolis. Mark Few Zags remain undefeated thanks to Wednesday's impressive win over number 11 West Virginia. Scott Drew's Bears remain undefeated thanks to Wednesday's impressive win over number 5 Illinois. So, Norlander, before we look ahead to Gonzaga-Baylor, let's look back to Wednesday. Which team impressed you more in its most recent game, number one Gonzaga or number two Baylor?
That really is a tough one.
I didn't mean to stump you in the first minute.
Listen, it's early on a Friday. That's a tough one. I didn't see that one. I didn't see that one coming. I think it was Baylor. Now, Gonzaga, like West Virginia, I guess had the best defensive performance against Gonzaga in this young season, and Gonzaga still scored 87, and Joel Ayayi was the leading scorer, you know, and he's very, very good as well. I mean, Timmy, Suggs, and Kispert all getting plenty of love, and rightfully so, and any one of those dudes can be an All-American, and yet Ayayi led the team in scoring. So, I mean, that's just going to probably be the story against Gonzaga this year. Like, you could put up an amazing defensive effort, and then you're going to look up, and they're going to have put up, you know, 84 points and beat you by 8. Baylor up against Illinois, the way that it was able just to kind of turn off Illinois' water there with about 8 minutes to go, pull away. You know, Adam Flagler's emergence as another really good option, redshirt sophomore out of Presbyterian. You add him on top of Maceo Teague, Davion Mitchell, Jared Butler, and, you know, Baylor is just, you know, this is wonderful. This is a wonderful matchup that we are being gifted with here on Saturday. But, you know, to look back instead of forward real quick, I would say that Baylor on the whole ever so slightly impressed me more, because Illinois, I thought, played a relatively decent game. And, like, I thought it, you know, that's a big-time game for that program in the, you know, in the top five. This is, it should be its best season in 15, 16 years. And Baylor, at one point last season, won 23 straight. I thought Illinois played well and did well for itself, all told, because it wasn't expected to win the game, and a lot of good optimism there. But for Baylor to do what it did and how it did it, especially if you watched how that game changed from about 13 minutes to 9 minutes to 6 minutes to go, it kind of hit another gear where you saw, okay, they're legit. And then real quick on Gonzaga, what happened, I assume what we're going to see Jalen Suggs play most of this game on Saturday. There was, I actually did not see this in real. I was putting my boys down, so I did not see Suggs's injury in real time. I turned the game back on, got back downstairs after putting my boys down, probably about 15 minutes after the Suggs injury. And so, like, I think I turned it on, and like 2 minutes later, he was hopping around in the tunnel. So from my perspective, I thought he just had tweaked an ankle, and then come to find out that on college basketball Twitter for a good like 10 minutes, everyone was...
He died.
Yeah, like he it died. Was... Everyone was really like, holy crap, Jalen Suggs probably just pulled his Achilles and he's done for the season. And so it was just, from my perspective, it was... I didn't live that. So he got back... he convinced Mark Few to get back in the game, and he actually let him, and he seemed to be good. So that's the good news there, is that hopefully and ideally Suggs, it was just an ankle tweak, and he's going to be good to go, and he might be a little tight down there, but should be able to play in this big matchup Saturday.
If you'd have been watching it live, you'd have thought he's dead for sure. It was over with. Like, Jalen Suggs was done. Basketball career over. That's the way it looked from, you know, I mean, he was down for a while, and then they had to take him to the back, and then, of course, on Twitter, it's like, oh, that's it. You know, Gonzaga just lost its five-star freshman, and now the Zags will be lucky to play in the NIT. I mean, it was wild to watch. And then, of course, what a luxury. They just bring Andrew Nimhard off the bench, and he's terrific. Like, we've reached a point with Gonzaga where you lose your five-star freshman future lottery pick point guard, and that's not ideal, but at least you got this guy that started 60 games at Florida that can come in and handle things for a little while. So they're loaded, and the way that game unfolded on Wednesday night was a reminder of that. They trailed by 5 points of the half. They shot 25% from three in the game, lost Jalen Suggs for a while, and still beat West Virginia by five. That's how good they are. And I went and looked this up last night because we've talked about this before. I remember when Philip Petrushev, who was going to be a preseason first-team All-American, according to anybody with a brain, because he was going to be the leading returning scorer on the preseason number one. That almost automatically is going to make you a preseason All-American, first team. So he announces, or it gets announced, that he is foregoing his eligibility and he's going to play overseas and he's done with college basketball. And at that point, I mean, like, when the team you've got number one in the preseason loses its best player, somewhat surprisingly, you're probably going to put somebody else at number one. And I remember talking to people around the Gonzaga program then, and they were like, we'll be fine. And I know it's only three games, but Filip Petrushev averaged 17.5 points, 7.9 rebounds, shot 56.2% from the field last season, which was good enough to make him a preseason first-team All-American coming into this season had he decided to continue his college basketball career. His replacement, Drew Timmy. He's averaging 23 points, 6.3 rebounds, and shooting 60.4% from the field. It's only three games, sure, but keep in mind, most of Petrushev's games were against WCC competition. The Gonzaga's two of the first three games are against Kansas and West Virginia. By the way, the Big 12 preseason poll is one Baylor, two Kansas, three West Virginia. Gonzaga, in what will be the first 12 days of the season, will have a chance to knock off the number one, number two, and number three teams in the Big 12, according to the preseason Big 12 poll. So they're awesome, and I can't wait for Saturday. With Baylor, everybody understands Baylor is great defensively. They got Mark Vidal. They you know, as you said, they turned the water off on Illinois. They also scored 51 second-half points on Illinois. Shot 45.5% from the field, 38.9% from three. And you probably do, because this is what you do for a living. Their offensive efficiency rating is higher than their defensive efficiency rating right now. They're number two in offensive efficiency, yes. Number eight in defensive efficiency. So elite at both, which means on Saturday, we get the two best offenses in college basketball going up against each other. It's on CBS. It's America's most watched network.
Yeah, and it's at 1 Eastern. I'm thinking that if Gonzaga wins this game, it's going to have the best, you know, run of dominance over elite Big 12 teams in a short period of time since Syracuse like beat four Big 12 teams in the 2003 tournament to win the national championship there. This would put Gonzaga in, you know, in early pole position for number one overall seed. We got plenty of time to go. I understand that, but if Gonzaga were to win this game, its resume just is going to be four games in. There's not a close second at that point. If Baylor can win it, then yeah, it's going to have two wins over top five teams, and that's going to be huge there. Can we go with a couple trivia times right now?
You don't have a trivia time already on this Friday morning.
Oh, I got it's early and I am ready. Because I got a little one versus two history lesson story that we'll be posting later on this morning at CBSSports.com. How many wins all time do you think Gonzaga has versus number one or number two ranked teams? And I say number one or number two, this is actually a number one versus number one game. Baylor is number one in the coaches poll. Gonzaga is number one in the AP poll. So what? How many wins do you think Gonzaga as a program has all time against top two teams?
Five.
Two. Now, trivia time. What about Baylor? What do you think Baylor's record is all time versus number one and number two teams?
I got to guess a record?
Yeah, just guess a record. I mean, how many times do you think Baylor in the Big 12, Big 8, et cetera, et cetera? How about this?
Are we counting the Bill Henderson years?
We're counting. Was Bill Henderson around? The AP poll has been around since the 48-49 season. I'm not up to snuff on all my Bill Henderson knowledge, so I don't know if he had left for good by the time the first AP poll came into existence.
By the way, I've had multiple listeners reach out to tell me that they researched why Bill Henderson stepped away from Baylor's basketball program for a while. He had to serve. He had to serve our country.
Well, then Scott Drew's currently in a John Wooden situation with Mick Cronin, if that's the case. He's going to have to beat Gonzaga to usurp Bill Henderson. I'm saying that right now.
I'm going to say Baylor's record against number one or number two teams all time is 2-11.
So you're actually – that's Gonzaga's 2-9 all time. Baylor, 0-18 all time. Okay. Never beaten a number one or number two ranked team ever. Have
not
these
even
Bears.
Bill Henderson? Not even Bill Henderson?
Nope. And nine of those losses have come with Scott Drew on the sideline there. So a lot of potential narrative-driving results can come from this. I do think Gonzaga is going to win. I expect a great game. I tweeted this out. We talked about it previously in the offseason. This game is only even happening because the Pac-12's, what do we call them again? CEOs? Is that what it was? I can't remember. Anyway, these presidents and chancellors at Pac-12 schools, when they decided what wound up being temporarily to not play football or any fall sports, and the same went for winter until 2021, that meant that Baylor and Gonzaga both lost Pac-12 opponents on their schedule. And then Mark Few and Scott Drew got on the horn, and they were like, we're going to make this happen. And so here we get it. We get a number one versus number two. This is the 43rd all-time meeting between number one and number two ranked teams. It's the 25th of those 43 that have actually happened in the regular season. We've been fortunate in that we've had more as of late. The most recent one would have been Michigan State versus Kentucky to start the 2019-20 season at the Champions Classic. The number one ranked team is 22-20 in this game, so it's actually pretty close. And then Jeff Borzello, our buddy from ESPN, he cited ESPN's stats and research crew that says, apparently, and I did not check this, but I'm going to take their word for it, in the previous 42 meetings, the entire point total, number two has one more point total than the number one team. The average score in the past 42 meetings is 75-75. So this is pretty great. We've had 40% of the time, the game ends within a 5-point margin, and there have been five times where it's actually needed overtime, three more times where it was only a 1-point margin. So as of late, it's been a pretty close matchup overall, only decided by 4.3 points the last six times we've had number one versus number two. And then I threw this nugget out on Twitter on Thursday. This is the first time since GP was in the building in 2008 that was Tennessee-Memphis. This is the first time since the Tennessee-Memphis game that a one versus two matchup in college basketball has not had one of Duke, Kentucky, or Kansas involved.
Let me ask you this. From a historical perspective, since you know so much about one versus two matchups, from a historical perspective, is this the most unlikely one versus two matchup in college basketball history?
I think that's the case. Because if you go back and look at the previous matchups, dominated obviously by blue bloods, you occasionally have a Memphis versus Tennessee game where it's two of those kind of deals. And I remember when that game happened in 08, I was running College Hoops Journal back then, and I remember ESPN basically building its programming to a large extent because it was in February, and that was a non-conference. Yeah, I think February or late January, and that was a non-conference game. The kind of non-conference matchup that we almost never, ever get anymore in college basketball past like January 15, with the exception of the SEC Big 12 Challenge. It was a big deal because of where – Cal obviously had Memphis rolling, and then Bruce Pearl getting Tennessee to that kind of level, you know, top two team in the country. But otherwise, yes, I mean, Gonzaga and Baylor both have never been involved in a number one versus number two game, so this is the first time for them. And then usually it's either one of the blue bloods we know. Obviously, UCLA and Kentucky have been in more one versus two games than any other programs ever. Both have been in nine of these before, and this is the first time for Gonzaga and Baylor. So it is among the more unexpected, but since they were both really, really good last year, like, it's not a total shock. It's not like, you know, we're 11 games into the season. These have been two teams that were outside the top 10 of the preseason, and look what they've done. No, they were expected to be really, really good, and we get the benefit of getting this game in early December, and it's obviously the highlight of the weekend in college sports.
In that 2008 game, Memphis was 26-0. The game was played on February 23rd, 2008. It was a non-league game, obviously. And when John Calipari was the coach at Memphis, he used to try to schedule at least one of these because they were just rolling through Conference USA, and he wanted to test his team deeper into the calendar in advance of the NCAA tournament. So this was that game. And you're right, I was in the building. Number two Tennessee upsets number one Memphis. And then I guess it was three nights later, I was in the building in Nashville when number one Tennessee, because Tennessee moves to number one after beating Memphis, immediately has to play Vanderbilt and loses that game 72-69. So I saw the number one team in the AP poll lose twice in a three-day span in the state of Tennessee, which is something that might never happen again. You're exactly right that there's nothing surprising about number one Gonzaga versus number two Baylor based on what we thought these teams were going to be heading into the season. Gonzaga was preseason number one and Baylor was preseason number two, and they're both undefeated, so here we are. But from a historical perspective, I really do think it's got to be the most unlikely one versus two matchup we've ever had, and probably not even close, because Gonzaga, I don't even know how to technically define what a, quote, blue blood is. But at this point, Gonzaga is a blue blood program, at least in modern times. I mean, they haven't missed the NCAA tournament since 1998. They've been one seeds. They've been to a Final Four. They've played for a title. They're awesome consistently. Not just a great program from outside of the power conference structure, not just a great West Coast program. They are one of the best programs in America, period. You don't need to qualify it anymore. But they never made an NCAA tournament until 1995. That was the first NCAA tournament appearance for Gonzaga, 1995. In the 1998-99 season, I was also in the building. It was called the Pyramid. It's now a Bass Pro Shop, but at the time it was a pyramid that they played basketball in. And Gonzaga came in to play Memphis. I was a senior in college, and Gonzaga beat them 88-73. I don't think I'd ever heard of Gonzaga, all right? I was a college basketball fan. Had no idea what was happening. They blow Memphis's doors off. They end up going to the NCAA tournament that season. They get their first NCAA tournament win in that 1999 NCAA tournament, and they literally have not missed the NCAA tournament since. Just awesome stuff, but still, like, it's all happened in my adult life. Meantime, there's Baylor. People understand that story at this point. Scott Drew took over that program in 2003, that program crippled by scandal because one player literally murdered another player, which led to Dave Bliss being fired, and then Scott Drew takes it over. And in the first 4 years, he finishes next to last, and next to last in the Big 12. That's how that thing, that's where that was, again, in 2003. And I mean, you just mentioned the 2003 NCAA tournament, Syracuse running through the Big 12. Well, part of the Big 12 was like recovering from a murder scandal. That's Baylor. Scott Drew takes over, and now he has built that into, you know, one of the most reliably successful programs in the sport. They were going to be a one seed in the tournament last season. Now they're ranked number two in the country, and I can't wait for Saturday. It should be terrific.
This is This is great stuff. College basketball has actually been gifted with a number of matchups between top five teams, like we had with Baylor, Illinois, top 10 teams. You know, Gonzaga, West Virginia would qualify there, and that's still going to be the case. Even like top 20 matchups, we've had a lot considering how many games have needed to be postponed or canceled to this point of the season, which was an expected outcome. We're hitting at about an 80% rate of games getting played, which is close to what college football has. But the fact that we've had a lot of interesting matchups, I think, has been very, very good for the sport. And then, yes, it comes to the main stage in a huge way with Gonzaga versus Baylor at 1 o'clock Eastern on Saturday on CBS out of Indianapolis there. So that's a huge matchup and a wonderful deal. I mean, it's almost aside from the actual loss that one of the teams will take, it's really a no lose situation in terms of Baylor's going to, like, there's the reputation, barring Gonzaga winning this game 86-64 and like just totally demolished. And if that happens, then we're really going to have a discussion about who can possibly, you know, beat this team. Because they already look, I mean, I already had people giving me flack for when I said it's inarguable that Gonzaga has the most talent and is the best team on offense in college basketball. That's irrefutable. It doesn't mean they can't lose. Baylor can win against Gonzaga Saturday. But Andrew Nembhard starts at point guard for every team in the country except the one that he's on. I don't think it's arguable, period. And I've heard this, by the way, this is something that when I was in Bubbleville and even last night got a couple texts from coaches, it is a quickly forming consensus that on offense, Gonzaga just straight up has more weapons than anyone in America. There's just not another team that has the amount of dudes that they have, and Nembhard puts it over the top. So if they are able to win and win big against Baylor, then I'm normally not one for this, and they still got to play like Iowa and all that stuff. But like if this isn't close, then we are going to already have to entertain the conversation given the league that they play in, if they're going to be able to run the table and go undefeated. So that's the big one on Saturday.
I'm always ready to talk about whether somebody can go undefeated.
You actually are. I think I've actually banned this on the podcast until January. I might have to walk that back. They got to beat Baylor by at least 20 though. Because I think we went through this literally this very thing a year ago or 2 years ago. Because I just feel like it's, I don't know, because it never happens. It almost never happens. And so I feel like we're always a bit too eager. I will pick the game here. I will say Gonzaga wins. I think Baylor's going to do a good job defensively. And so by that, I mean Baylor's going to hold them to like 82 points. So I'll say Gonzaga 82, Baylor 77. And it's within reach for Baylor even into the final 2 minutes.
I will say Gonzaga 81, Baylor 78. And there's an early number I saw that was Gonzaga -4. So I would take the points, I guess, because I could easily, I mean, I don't think it's crazy to think Baylor could win the game. And I could certainly see it, you know, Gonzaga winning by 2 or 3 or whatever. I think I just said Gonzaga wins by 3. So I would take the points, but I do think Gonzaga wins, and they will then be 4-0, assuming they win, 4-0 against 4 power conference schools, including the 3 that were projected to finish 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in the Big 12. So, like, if you're one of those people who ever tweeted me and said, "Well, what would Gonzaga do if they were in a real conference?" They would win. They would win it. That's what they would do. They would win. They would win it, and probably win it easily. That's how good they are. We're joking, but if they get past Baylor, especially if they get past Baylor in impressive fashion, it's not crazy to start talking about can they go undefeated. The only game they would have remaining against a ranked opponent would be a December 19th game against Iowa, and St. Mary's looks down. BYU looks down. Honestly, who in the WCC do you think can play with them?
You're just going to dismiss the Dons like that? The Dons like to compete, my friend.
I know what the Dons did.
The Dons also lost
to Rhode Island
and to UMass Lowell. And a UMass Lowell player threw up on an NC State player, by the way. Did you see that?
Yeah. Elvis sick to his stomach.
Tyler Cox at Bleed KY Blue said, a UMass player threw up on an NC State player tonight. All kinds of disgusting. It is. By the way, my 2-year-old completely vomited all over me 2 days ago. Just like,
oh, no.
Oh, just, I mean, GP. Like, terrible. I think he actually got into the hand soap because he was partying after that. He's like, oh, I'm good to go. I'm boot and rally. Let's do this thing. Just all over me, like all bad.
Have you reached a point at your house where the kids just pull out all the toys and they don't really play? There's constantly toys on your floor all the time.
When we started recording this podcast, it didn't pick up on the mic, thankfully, but I could hear my wife saying, "These toys need to be picked up now." In that stern mom voice. Oh yeah, they're just out all the time.
Will your boys actually pick up their toys?
Yes, but I need to get involved with it and make it fun for it to happen. Or I need to really lay down the law. And like with my 5-year old, I gotta basically say, you're not getting this unless you start picking up your toys. So the two year old is still, he doesn't care. He doesn't care.
I am so frustrated with my house. Like I work hard. I should be able to walk in every day after radio and into a nice home that's perfect.
That's not gonna happen.
And every day I walk in and there's just chaos everywhere. It's just stuff everywhere. My little guy, Lou, I walk in the other day and I actually will try to take some time in the middle. Like if there's a radio interview I want to listen to or something I want to listen to, I'll turn it on and I won't just sit there and listen. I'll say, okay, this is a time where I can pick up toys. And so I'll go downstairs. Keep in mind, my boys got an entire toy room upstairs. They have their bedroom downstairs, a toy room upstairs, and somehow our den still ends up covered in toys. So I'll pick up, you know, and I had everything picked up a couple days ago. I come home 3 hours later, and there are 2,000 Legos.
Oh, yeah.
In a rug. If it's on the hardwood floor, you can sweep them up. They're on a rug. You actually have to pick them up with your hands. And I was like, I was talking to my wife. I said, Kelly, what happened? How did this happen? And she said, Louie, just dumped them out. Just dumped them out. And I had to look at him. And I said, why would you do that? And he says, because I wanted to. And what are you supposed to?
Nothing you can do with that. That's his right. That's his right.
So frustrated.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad.
Like, I came real close to throwing everything away. And just making this a toy-free house. We have no toys anymore. Play on your stupid iPad.
My wife has made that threat, by the way, multiple times.
Just get hypnotized by your iPads. I don't even care about the long-term damage it does at this point. I just don't want to look at toys all over the floor. I'm fine with having my children suffer long-term because they were hypnotized by an iPad if it means I don't have to step on a Lego ever again.
Let's reverse engineer this. All right, so how's Gonzaga going to lose? The Dons lost to Rhode Island. They lost to UMass Lowell. A UMass Lowell player vomited on an NC State. I don't even want the details of that. This is apparently a fact. UMass Lowell had a dude vomit on an NC State player. Not an ideal situation, period. Definitely not an ideal situation in the middle of a pandemic. I hope the UMass Lowell player just had a little food poisoning or some weird bug and all are well. And from that, we got to Legos. Yeah, good times.
So what are we talking about?
Well, there's another, we talked about Gonzaga and Baylor and how good they've been.
Yeah.
There was another big win on Wednesday night and a kind of an arrival, another team that's going to have a huge game this weekend. We're going to get into that next, but first
look at you.
Check this out.
Ooh. Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, Parrish. So Wednesday night, practically Wednesday afternoon, again, just complete disgust with the Maui tournament happening in the afternoon. But that's, I'll get over it eventually. But
dude, it happened in North Carolina. You have to get over the time of the championship game. It's not even happening on an island anymore.
I know. It's I got issues. But Texas, Matt Coleman, 0.1 seconds to go. Texas beats Carolina. They get the win. They win the championship there. Texas has a big game this weekend against Villanova, which we can get to in a minute there. But for the Longhorns, I mean, this was the kind of turn of events, if you will, for Texas that their fans have been waiting for since Shaka Smart got there. He got there in 2015. We're on the doorstep of 2021, and the Longhorns are 4-0. They are a good 4-0. They started 4-0 a season ago, but they only had one real notable win, and that was against Purdue. They beat Indiana handily, who went 2-1 down there in Asheville, the only loss coming to Texas. And then they beat a quality Carolina team with Leaky Black. Since we occasionally talk camel fighting and Leaky Black, I feel like we really need to – you're setting a precedent at the start of these podcasts. Like, let's actually meet this challenge here. Leaky Black had 8 points, was 2 of 3 from the foul line, 10 boards, a couple of assists. It wasn't enough in 34 minutes of play. Texas wins 69-67 to get to 4-0, and Matt Coleman was outstanding in that game. They had a nice all-around team effort, but Coleman, as Shaka told me in the offseason, he's going to be their best player, and that certainly is the case. It's the second-best team on defense to this point in the country, GP, in defensive efficiency. Are the Longhorns there, top 20 on offense? They've got a huge home game against Villanova on Sunday. Your impressions of what Texas has been able to do, and when I say, is this the year, I want to frame that to you as, is this truly the year? Like, Texas, even if it's not going to be as good as Baylor or Kansas, and maybe it will be, but if it's not that, like, is this the year where they are a clear cut, we are into the Sweet 16, we're not messing around, we're not having a close game, we're in that, we're flirting with Elite Eight status. Will this be the year for the Longhorns?
I think this will be a good year for the Longhorns. I'm not ready to just put them in magic marker, Sharpie them into the Sweet 16. I mean, that's a difficult deal. Let me ask you this. They're 4-0 with wins over North Carolina and Indiana. Where would you put them in the Big 12 right now?
Can you give me one? Give me two more days. I still put them fourth, but it is a really good, like, it's a Big 10 situation. Like, it's a really good top four there. Baylor, then Kansas, then West Virginia, then Texas, but the margins are just, they are really, really slim. They're very slim.
Right. Let me be clear. I'm happy for Shaka and happy for that program. God, poor Texas. They've got all of the resources in the world, an incredible natural recruiting base, and they stink at football, and they've been not what they wanted to be in basketball while watching their former basketball coach do well at Tennessee. And so it's been a frustrating few years. Now, I've made this point before, and I don't know that anybody else ever makes it when they talk about the Shaka Smart era at Texas to date. But it's true, and it's not an excuse as much as it's a possible explanation, but he's lost his, you know, people like to talk about what he hasn't done at Texas so far. And I'm sure even Shaka would tell you that it hasn't gone the way he wanted it to go or thought it would go. He's lost his leading scorer midseason twice. And that's hard to overcome. So I am happy that he is off to this type of start, because I have never wavered from he can be the guy at UT. And when you get off to this kind of start and you've got that nice blend of experience and talent, even NBA talent with Greg Brown, then it gives you a shot to break through and stop having to answer questions about why you haven't done this and why you haven't done that. It doesn't guarantee you a Sweet 16. Single elimination tournaments are tricky, but I'll put it this way. They have gotten off to an incredible start that underlines the preseason expectations that this is on paper supposed to be Shaka Smart's best team at Texas. So far, it looks like it's capable of being, in fact, likely of being Shaka's best team at Texas. And you've got Matt Coleman, senior guard, 16 points, 5 assists, 1.5 steals. And then, you know, let's never just gloss over the Andrew Jones story. Diagnosed with leukemia in January 2018. Now a fifth-year junior averaging 10 points in 24.7 minutes per game. So there's an incredible story there as well.
Yeah, without a doubt, worth mentioning every single time we talk about Texas on the podcast, Andrew Jones has been able to retain his playing career and certainly is a big factor on this team. Kai Jones has been outstanding, by the way, among the most efficient players through four games in the season. He's missed 1 2-point shot, 0 3-point shots, and 2 foul shots to this point. The big man has been outstanding there. Greg Brown, he can be a highlight reel, but he's a great case of a really super talented freshman who's got a good chance at being a lottery pick, but it's not all there yet. If you really watch what he did and what he did not do down in Nashville, if anything, that's great reason to be optimistic if you're a Texas fan. And yeah, you're right about just the situation at that school. Are they gonna fire Tom Herman? Are they not? And Shaka Smart, if he could really just keep this going, give them some reason for some optimism, because I know football means everything down there, and he has been underperforming. How about this, Parrish? So on Sunday, Texas plays Villanova. They're going to host Villanova. And I don't know if this was the case a season ago. In fact, I'm going to check this in real time to see if it was the case. I don't think it was. It was not, because Kansas was fifth. So this weekend, we have Gonzaga versus Baylor. Did you see this? Gonzaga versus Baylor. That's 1-2 in the polls and in KenPom. And then Villanova against Texas. Villanova's third in KenPom. Texas is 4. Last season's Champions Classic did not feature all four top KenPom teams. Even though they were top four in the polls, they weren't top four in KenPom. So this might be, I don't know how you could fact check this. You'd have to just spend hours, and I'm not going to do that. But this might be the first time ever that we have 1-2 and then 3-4 in KenPom playing essentially within a 24-hour period of each other. Again, this is great, great stuff for college hoops. Villanova's got hell of a challenge here. After it'll be a little bit of a jolt to the system too. They get 4 games in a Bubbleville, go back to Philly for a few days, rest up, be able to stretch their legs, so to speak, then hop on a plane. I imagine they're flying just about now as we're recording the podcast to get down to Austin, or maybe they'll fly Saturday and then get this game in on Sunday. So that's a wonderful matchup. And Villanova's the 4th best team on offense. As I said before, Texas is the 2nd best team on defense. So I know it's still an NFL Sunday and that's a big time deal, but you're listening to this podcast because you love college hoops. And the great thing is there is a marquee matchup on each. I mean, there's interesting ones beyond that, but for Saturday, you've got Gonzaga Baylor. And then on Sunday, Nova Texas is a 1 o'clock tip out of Austin. So that's wonderful news. And just a couple of huge matchups here in early December.
The possibilities for what you're talking about, the top four teams playing in KenPom in a 24-hour period, some of the Champions Classics might qualify. I'm not sure, but maybe 2008 Final Four.
Yes.
You might have.
That's probably it, but otherwise, in the regular season, I don't even think so, but you're right. Because those teams finished 1, 2, 3, and 4, Kansas, Memphis, Carolina, UCLA. So that would have been the only other easily conceivable time where this has happened. But it's just great that the schedule wound up bending this way, GP, to get two high profile games like that back to back days.
Can we talk about Luka Garza for a minute?
Yes, we can. It was the last thing I caught a little bit of SVP's Sports Center show before I hit the hay on Thursday. Lay out for the listeners what he's been doing, because it's bonkers. I know that the competition has been great, but he's still, because the competition has been great, I don't think it's been like front and center, like we haven't talked about him until now. But yeah, go ahead. Let the people know what he's been doing there.
So on Thursday night, he got 35 points and 10 rebounds in 25 minutes, 99-58 victory over Western Illinois. 13-21 from the field, 2-4 from three. At half, it was Luka 30, Western Illinois 26. Rob Jeter, the Leathernecks coach. I love the Leathernecks. Imagine outscoring all of the Leathernecks in a 20-minute span. That's what Luka Garza did on Thursday night. Outscored an entire team of Leathernecks. Rob Jeter was like, listen, you can watch all the film you want on Garza. You don't know what's going on until you get out there. It's too easy for him, and it has been too easy for him. He's the first player this season to have multiple 30-point games. He scored 76 points in his past two games, which is the most for a Big Ten player in a two-game stretch in the past 20 years. He's now averaging 34 points and 9.7 rebounds in just 26 minutes per game, shooting 76% from the field, 62.5% from three, and 80.8% from the free throw line. Yes, the competition is lackluster. The wins are over NC Central, Southern, and Western Illinois. Those schools are ranked 291st, 266, and 346 in the country at KenPom. But the wins have come by an average of 32.7 points. And a lot of people, high majors, you know, all Americans, are playing against low major bad competition right now. And nobody is doing to the competition what Luka Garza is doing to the competition right now. Do you want to take this opportunity to apologize to him? It was just last week you're talking about, right now I think Jeremiah Robinson Earl should be the leading candidate for National Player of the Year. And Luka Garza's like, double bird, I'll go get 35 on the Leathernecks.
First of all, love the Leathernecks because it means that their opponent perpetually feels like it's playing a game in 1917, okay? Because there's still a team called the Leathernecks out there. Love it. Absolutely love it. I did say that about Jeremiah Robinson Earl. Let's just, you know, Nova goes into Texas, wins by 7, and Robinson Earl drops, you know, 25, 12, and 6. Let's just, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen. But if it does, let's just circle back here. Garza's been great. He is now, we're not going to update this every podcast, but he is the front runner for National Player of the Year. But the competition has been just horrendous. But I still put stock in, and I've long done this. I think you've kind of joined me on this train in recent seasons. Sometimes teams or players will be downplayed. In fact, Parrish even goes, he's with this, but he goes against it too, because he doesn't like voting for the guys in small leagues for a top 101. But you're with me.
Well, here's let me be clear. Oh, here's where I'm at on that. I don't care if you average 18 points per game for a bad team. It does not matter to me.
Yeah, I get that. But if it's 30 points a game and you're balling out against bad teams and good teams, you know, it's just that's, you know,
if you're third, if you're doing 30 points a game for a good team against bad competition, I'll recognize that. I had a coach one time tell me, and I've never forgotten it. He said, GP, every team in the country has got somebody that averages 15 points per game. And I said, not Florida State, ever.
That's right. And you were correct to say that, by the way. Yeah. And, and the weird thing is Leonard Hamilton was sitting on the other side of you at PGA when you said that. Yeah, ballsy comment.
I said, Florida State has 7 guys who average between 9 and 12, but not 15. But in all seriousness, his point was, even bad teams score. Even every bad team has a player who leads them in scoring. So, oh, he led his team in scoring. Doesn't mean anything if it's for a bad team. So I am very dismissive of scorers for bad teams. I just don't care.
All right. Here's the point I was making, though. Parrish is with me when it comes to even if you are playing bad competition, but you're killing the competition. Like, you're winning games by 19, 27, 22, 31, 15 points. Then there is something to be said for that if you were consistently doing that. And so although this is only a 3-game sample size, given that Garza has come out of the gate with 26, 41, and 35 points, and he's yet to play a 30-minute basketball game, and his offensive rating has been 168 against North Carolina Central, 165. These are ridiculous. 165 against Southern. Drop down, pick it up, you slacker. 127 against the Leathernecks. It's been a wonderful start for Garza. The competition obviously hasn't been good. The highest rate of those teams is Southern, which currently clocks in at 266 in KenPom. But still, he's off to a wonderful start and certainly is an early leader for National Player of the Year. We'll see how it goes against Leaky Black and the Tar Heels. Iowa's next game is scheduled to be at home on Tuesday against the Tar Heels. We'll get more into that, obviously, on the Sunday night pod.
And North Carolina does have like 50 talented front court players to throw at him.
Yes. You're right.
So it doesn't mean he won't go big again. In fact, I'll be shocked if he doesn't go big again. But obviously, next game, it's a major step up in competition. That is the ACC Big Ten Challenge game, Iowa against North Carolina on Tuesday. We'll talk about it on Sunday night's podcast. You might know this because you might have just been looking at it, but I was somewhat surprised to click on the KenPom Player of the Year race, to the extent that it's a race. He's not. Luka Garza is not number one. Did you see this?
I did not.
Do you know who? Take a guess. Take 5 guesses. Take 5,000 guesses. Pour out your Legos.
pour out your Legos. So it's someone that's obviously not guessable, so I'm not going to waste the listeners' time.
Oh, we've been wasting listeners' time for years.
I think they would disagree. I think the reviews say otherwise. Or we waste it in a beautiful way. But if that's not guessable, you're saying Garza is two?
Garza is number two. It's not guessable. All right,
then who is it? And is it justifiable?
Well, the guy, they played, I believe, one game, and the guy went for 31, maybe. It is a Rutgers transfer playing at Oregon, Eugene Omorui.
Oh, yeah, okay, of course. That was just on the tip of my tongue there. Okay, yeah. So they played one game. All right, so fair enough.
I think they played one game and lost it.
They lost to Missouri, indeed. Yes, they do.
The Pac-12 is off to like a not great start. You've got Oregon 0-1, Stanford 1-2, UCLA took that loss to San Diego State, USC just lost to UConn. So it's I think the sixth rated conference right now. You know, the lowest of the Power Five. So not a great start for the Pac-12, but hey, it's still early, Norlander.
Yeah, real quick on the Pac-12. And then I got a few games I want to throw at you for this weekend. Stanford is, I don't think this has not been officially announced as we're doing this podcast, but Stanford's just not left North Carolina because it's based in Santa Clara County. And so like the San Francisco 49ers can't play games in Santa Clara County. They have banned contact sports. The fact that it went as far, the health officials there are not effing around. So I mentioned this previously. So Stanford, San Jose State, and Santa Clara also can't play their games. Stanford is staying in North Carolina for at least two games. And, you know, you mentioned the Pac-12 is not off to a good start. I'll be interested to see who Stanford schedules. I would figure they're going to get that done in the next 24 hours. And if they can play good teams, they looked good, but they didn't get the wins that they were hoping to get in Asheville. So just keep an eye on that. Okay.
Maybe they could get a game with the Leathernecks.
Well, that's Western Illinois, and they're in North Carolina, so I don't think that's
The Leathernecks will travel.
I don't think the
Leathernecks will travel. You think the Leathernecks are scared to travel? They're not scared to travel. I saw somebody on Twitter when you mentioned this Santa Clara County thing.
I know. I did it. Listen, I was vamping on the podcast. I know. They gave me crap. Go ahead.
So you were apparently talking on the podcast. I don't know if I was listening.
Yeah, they were referencing what I said on the damn podcast.
Yeah, and you said, oh, yeah, you know, Stanford is in Santa Clara County, and there's another D1 team in Santa Clara County. Can't off the top of my head, can't think of it. And somebody was like, it's Santa Clara. Santa Clara is in Santa Clara County. Steve Nash is rolling over in his grave with Elvis Presley.
Okay.
What if Steve Nash were in a grave with Elvis Presley? How wild would that be?
Whoo! Yes, exactly. That's why the pod's glorious. Okay. Let's make some picks here. I'm going to throw a few games at you, okay?
Sure.
All right, this is a heads up for the listeners as well. Couple decent ones on Friday. Wisconsin at Marquette. Big one for both programs. Wisconsin rates as the better team. Marquette's been off to a solid start, although it could be better because they lost to Cade Cunningham and Oklahoma State earlier this week, but the Golden Eagles are 2-1 with wins over Eastern Illinois. Western Illinois is the Leathernecks. I haven't checked yet. Eastern Illinois' nickname. What do we think it is?
Eastern Illinois?
Yeah.
The Eastern Illinois is the Leather Ears.
Leather Ears.
Okay. Yeah, the Eastern Illinois Leather Ears.
I feel it's either a dog or a cat. I don't think it's I'm going to say Wildcats. I'm going to find out right now. I know that's not right, though. I feel like it might be the dog variety. What are they? Eastern Illinois. Panthers. It is a cat. Just the wrong cat. There we go.
They're the Panthers.
They're the Panthers. All right. So Marquette's 2-1. So that is that's a biggie. That's actually a pretty good local rivalry. Marquette gets the benefit of hosting.
We tend to call that an in-state rivalry.
That's right. A good in-state rivalry. Interconference. Not intra. Inter. Not intra. Inter. I am going to take GP. I'm going to take Marquette to win this one. Wisconsin is a 4.5-point favorite on the road. No fans. You want to just make a quick pick here?
I just think that no fan thing like really matters. I mean, we just watched Michigan State go into Cameron Indoor and just handle Duke in a way that Duke doesn't get handled inside Cameron Indoor. And perhaps it's because Duke's not as good as Duke normally is. But it also could be because playing at Cameron Indoor with no fans isn't that big of a deal. And so from my perspective here, I got a top 10 team playing against a team that just lost to Oklahoma State in front of no fans or very few fans. I'll take the top 10 team.
All right, fair enough. The only other game of interest on Friday is at 9 o'clock. This was...
Hold up. Did you just make me pick a Friday game? I don't do that.
Yeah, you did.
I don't pick Friday games. That's been established.
You picked it. You don't need to pick this next one, but I reeled you in. All right, how about this? Oregon plays against Seton Hall. Oregon plays Seton Hall in Omaha. The only thing that would actually improve this whole situation for me is if they somehow managed to make this game happen at Pinnacle Bank. But it's not happening at Pinnacle Bank, which is totally unfortunate. It's going down in Creighton's joint, but that's totally fine. How about this for Seton Hall, by the way? They're trying to defy all logic in the COVID era. So they open the season at Louisville. They come back. They wind up playing Iona after being scheduled to play in Bubbleville and bailing on that. So they home against Iona. They bust to Rhode Island. They play at Rhode Island. They fly to Oregon. Then they're going to fly and play Penn State on Sunday, then come back home and play Wagner. Like, if you talk to coaches, they are trying to reduce travel as much as possible. Seton Hall is just like, we don't give an F. Like, what pandemic? We're gonna fly and travel as much as we damn well please. They got Oregon on Friday. It is an interesting game. Oregon's got the best player in America, as Parrish just previously told you. It's the 0-1 Ducks who have been just chilling in Omaha the past few days. GP doesn't pick Friday games, although he just did. This is kind of intriguing because the news here connected to this is that Oregon got LJ Figueroa cleared in the past 24 hours, so he'll be on the floor for this game. And for me, that's definitely enough. Oregon rates as the better team. Figueroa in. I would take Oregon to win, and if they do that, they're going to drop Seton Hall to 1-3. It's going to be a little bit of a different season without Miles Powell and co. Sticking around there. So that's the other big game on Friday. You don't pick games on Friday.
Games on Friday, but I will point out that Oregon is 0-1 with that loss to Missouri, and they are without Will Richardson. It was announced like 2 hours before the game that Will Richardson had surgery and is going to be out several weeks. So this Oregon team that you saw, some picked to win the Pac-12, you know, I had ranked in the preseason top 25 and won. It is not at full strength. Getting LJ eligible is obviously a plus, but having to play without Will Richardson is not ideal.
All right, a couple more. Without a doubt, Gonzaga, Baylor, Texas Nova overshadows kind of everything else this weekend. I'll just mention NC State plays at UConn. I think that might be the last game in Bubbleville. Maybe they've got one more after that, but that's Bubbleville wraps on Saturday there. UConn got a good win over USC. It was ugly, but they got it on Thursday, and so a good opportunity. Like, James Bouknight showed some real flashes there. A good opportunity for the Huskies to really make an early statement there and get a win. So we'll keep an eye on that. The line isn't out for it yet. And then the only two other ones that I think are notable particularly is another in-state rivalry, interconference rivalry, Cincinnati versus Xavier. This is a game that took a while to even get agreed upon because of the whole zip 'em up classic. Okay, zip 'em up classic, one of the best post-game quotes in the history of any college basketball rivalry. That's 3 o'clock Eastern on Sunday. Let's pick this one. Xavier at Cincinnati. Xavier's been weird, by the way. Have you seen what this team's been doing?
Well, they're 5-0.
They're 5-0, but they kill Oakland to start the season, and then they've kind of been like getting by the skin of their teeth. Otherwise, I mean, they're 5-0 and they're 63rd in KenPom because they beat Bradley by 1 point, Toledo by 3, need overtime to get past Eastern Kentucky. These are teams that are outside the top 100. They're just, who even knows? They play Cincinnati. Cincinnati, you know, it's a projected 3-point Bearcats win at KenPom there. Since Cincinnati's at home, I'll take the Bearcats there, but this does feel like a toss-up.
Yeah, I'll take Cincinnati at home, I guess, but whatever.
Okay, I love it. This is what the listeners demand. Last one, let's just mention Kentucky at Georgia Tech. How about this? So, like, 6 weeks ago, Josh Pastner starts talking about how he's... He starts talking about how he's just not going to have contact practice. He's like, I'm not going to put my team in a position where we could have contact tracing knock us out. So we're just going to like not practice this season. Let's check in on Georgia Tech at the moment here. Josh Pastner and the Yellow Jackets are 0-2 with losses to Georgia State and Mercer, both in-state teams, and now they got to play Kentucky. I don't have a recent correspondence with Josh. I'm curious to see if his philosophy on practicing has changed.
Might be time to, when you give up 123 to Georgia State, might be time to start practicing again.
Might be time to more than just roll the balls out there. This is a projected 6-point win for Kentucky, obviously coming off back-to-back losses. Richmond versus Kansas. If you're a UK fan and you're gripping just a little bit, considering, you know, this is something of a road game. I think it's in the Atlanta Hawks' building. I don't think it's
correct.
Yeah, so it's not like a true road game. I understand that, but I'm going to take Kentucky to win. If they can hit 2 3-pointers in this game, maybe. But I will take UK to win this one.
I will too, because UK didn't look good against Kansas, but they competed with Kansas. I mean, they had a shot in the final 10 seconds to tie the game, but because it was a 3-pointer, they had no shot at making it, so they lose by 3. But they still competed with Kansas, and Kansas, I think, is a legitimate top 10 team in the country. So if you can compete with Kansas on a neutral, you should be able to compete with Georgia Tech on a what amounts to a neutral, and probably win the game. But I will say, you know, Georgia Tech, at least in the preseason, was projected by some to be an NCAA tournament team. And so you still got this extremely inexperienced Kentucky team playing against a more experienced, not nearly as bad, if we're being honest, as their record and recent losses to Georgia State and Mercer might suggest. So this one could get tricky. And I think Kentucky fans handled the Richmond loss okay, handled the Kansas loss fine. You start 1-3 with a loss to Georgia Tech, which had lost to Mercer, Georgia State. That's when the message boards get, that's when they light up.
You're right. This is completely unrelated, but I want to fact check myself here because I had the tweet up as we started the podcast. So at BleedKYBlue, I quoted him as saying, a UMass Lowell player threw up on an NC State player tonight. All kinds of disgusting, which is. But then because I Mark Ennis, who does a great job locally covering Louisville, he's the one who kind of quote tweeted it onto my timeline. But then all the responses, first he goes, I mentioned the wrong team, sorry. I also don't have a – so someone else goes – someone goes, this happened in State's second game too. What – WTF is happening, right? This is the second NC State player to be puked on.
I was going to say very early in the season, like opening day or the second day of the season. Somebody – there. Are you saying that this latest vomit happened Thursday? Because there is a first week vomit that happened as well.
No, so I don't understand how the mix up happened, but someone asked, are you serious? He said, it was a mix up. This actually happened last week. I don't know how you get to a point where you think UMass Lowell was the vomiter, but that was not the case. So it was either Charleston Southern or North Florida. I want to apologize. And I will not go back and change the podcast. We will keep this organic. But UMass Lowell, Elvis Presley's alma mater, which is getting more run in the first two damn weeks of the season, more PR than it could ever hope for. There was no vomiting situation there, which is good to know. Bubbleville did not witness any sort of upchuck vomit, you know, any kind of that situation. I missed the first time this happened, and the only time, to be clear here, but I wanted to just to correct the record before we wrap.
I remember seeing the first throw up, which is now, which also doubles now as the only throw up. That's where we're at on this.
That's correct. What's your favorite term for throwing up, by the way?
Puking, I guess.
Puke. Puke. That's a funny word. Puke. Yeah.
Puke. Yeah. I puke. Like if I were trying to describe what happened to me in that night, I would say, yeah, I was puking.
Yeah, I'm good. You know, hurl, barf, Ralph, upchuck.
I don't do any of that.
I don't do any of that.
I puked. Yeah.
Kids are screaming right now, by the way. There's a toy situation going on. No doubt about it. I hear them.
I have no kids in my house. I have nobody in my house right now. I'm so happy.
You're living the life right now.
It is perfect.
You are absolutely living it. I am in the exact opposite situation. Wife is loaded with meetings today. Going to upload this podcast, and then I'm done. Then my Friday's out the window.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle, legend. Shouts to Larnell. And thank you guys for listening to the Ion College Basketball Podcast once again in the middle of the most idiotic pandemic of my entire lifetime. I've been on this planet now 43 years, and I have never dealt with a pandemic quite like this pandemic. So I appreciate you guys listening in the middle of a stupid pandemic. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. We'd appreciate it. And either way, we will talk to you again on Sunday. Till then, take care.